You're listening to Commercial Real Estate Deal Flow, the show where we hold nothing back. Welcome, everybody, to another show of CRE Deal Flow. I'm here with Tim Steele. Tim, what's up, dude?
Hello, hello.
Tim and I are riffing on commercial real estate. That's what CRE Deal Flow stands for. So we are going to keep it casual, but today, I think, what are we talking about today, Tim?
You know, kind of expand a little bit on a few things we touched on in the first episode, but we wrote down favorite asset types to sell finance and why. We can riff and talk, so it's easy just to riff and have a bunch of shoulda, coulda, woulda, and can't believe the Fed Reserve is doing this and that. But I think we talk what we like about our favorite asset types.
Yeah. Well, I would be lying if I said it, my favorite is selling mobile home parks, because it's not. And the other reason I say that is because that's what I, well, actually, I should take that back. I think the hardest thing to sell for me is RV parks. And that's because there's so many moving parts. I actually started my career selling multifamily and did that for 5 years and then decided to switch up the business completely, which was really hard, and moved into parks, mobile home parks. And then subsequently, I started selling RV parks because that blew up during COVID in 2020 and 2021.
Right.
And so I've had experience with those three assets primarily. I've done some triple net, and I think that's it. I've bought and sold some homes, but not personally. But
well, you recently flipped a house, right? So you've got experience there. It sounds like residential may not be your favorite.
No, and I never wanted to get into residential first and foremost because I didn't want to work on weekends, even though I do work on weekends. But generally speaking, I wasn't going to go do an open house, nor do I want to work with people that are looking for a place that they're actually going to live in. I think you're way too emotionally tied to that. So residential is completely out. That's really the reason for getting in commercial in the first place. But yeah, we flipped a home, which we got really lucky on because the market kept going up and up and up. This is back in like 2015. And we were actually doing a pop top where we take the whole second story off. And so we had to do some engineering. Like, it was serious. So we actually got lucky on that deal, even though it took us like 8 months to flip the home and a lot more money than we anticipated. But we've also, when I say we, I'm talking about my wife and I, because she was very much involved emotionally and financially. But we also flipped four mobile homes before we actually owned a park. So that was also interesting. And she did a lot of that work. But anyway, having said all that, I think least likely or least favorite is an RV park because there's so many moving parts.
Selling it or owning it or both?
I would say both after Westport. Get the F out of here.
That's its own episode, by the way. We'll talk about our first journey together and partnering up. So yeah, that was a two-part question. Your favorite to sell, your favorite to own.
Not least favorite.
Was the least favorite as well. So I guess two-part question. Yeah.
Well, I word that. Yeah. I think favorite is multifamily. It's just easier. Hmm. I mean, first of all, you're not dealing with private utilities. So I can tell you many deals have blown up when we're selling parks because they were either on well or septic. Mm-hmm. Generally it's septic that is oftentimes failing, and that is a huge deal killer. And so anytime we get a park in contract and it's got private utilities, really I'm not counting it as a deal until we get through all inspections and they sign off on removing their contingency. But yeah, I mean, multifamily, easy. Although actually triple net, maybe I did a couple, but those deals are pretty easy too.
Yeah.
Because really all it is like you put it in contract and then you go get most of them are closed cash, aren't they?
Triple net deals?
Yeah.
Oh no, I've financed a ton of them.
Oh yeah. Okay. We finance those too, but that was pretty much the whole transaction.
Incredibly easy to finance. If the lease isn't expiring in the next year, it's the buyer has to be aware, especially if it's their first time, you're buying the contract, not the building, right? The building's your collateral, but if it goes empty and it goes to, say it's a triple net is by a big national tenant versus a mom and pop tenant, you're paying for the contract. But they're incredibly easy. They're incredibly easy to own if it's structured right in the right area. You're not protected from everything, but they are a lot of fun to finance on my side.
Yeah. So a lot of times people will call that mailbox money, right? So triple net, meaning right. The tenant pays for the repair and maintenance, the taxes, and the insurance, right? So triple net of taxes, repairs, and insurance. They also have like absolute triple net. So what's the difference between like absolute and just triple net? Just like minor things with the building infrastructure that they're maintaining?
Yeah, great question. So, and by the way, another example of Tyson's bringing around to keep it known, there's audience members hearing some of the stuff the first time, and I'm just in it. Let's talk about the details. So yeah, the triple net, most people know it to be the tenant reimburses taxes, insurance, and common area maintenance, right? Where the landlord's only responsible for the roof, say siding, things like that. Absolute triple net is a tenant's responsible for it all. So, and this is probably better described by somebody who's a professional selling this stuff. But my understanding is the slight difference between triple net and absolute triple net is if the roof or HVAC or anything needs to be replaced, it's on the tenant, not the landlord. And so Why would a tenant do that? It's because they really want to be in that area, whether it's driving traffic or not. So insert your known name brands that have brick and mortar.
Yeah. And triple net, by the way, maybe we're way off topic here, but already. I guess we're talking asset types. Triple net really has been thought of as one of the most passive commercial real estate investment asset classes that you can have, because theoretically you're not doing anything. The tenant is taking care of their entire property, so to speak. And If it's one tenant, right? I mean, what is there to do really? And usually these leases are long-term, like you said. So if you have a 20-year lease, generally there might be like rent escalations every 5 years.
Yeah.
But you have a creditworthy, really, really strong creditworthy tenant, like a Starbucks or, I mean, shoot, I don't even know anymore at this point in the game, but I would guess like, go ahead.
Yeah, no, a little history is when I started, the triple net game that was big in town was Walgreens, right?
I was going to say Walgreens.
A lot of developments. And then CVS tried, and I think they had some internal strife. They've come back. But at that time, from an investor's perspective, I started seeing what's really, really interesting is multifamily brokers specifically were like, hey, are you sick of tenants and toilets? Let's get you mailbox money, to your saying earlier. And so you had a lot of 10, 20, and even 30 plus year multifamily owners sell. I would even go back to say 2016 forward, a little more focused on learning and or investing in triple net, because they were just so fatigued with the management of things that are beyond their control, but they're responsible for. And that's the beauty of triple net, you know, things that are beyond their control are responsible by the tenant. And I say 2016 specifically, I'm a little fuzzy on the date. So anybody listening might be like, you know, Tim's just saying a year, but the Dollar General really exploded, right? Dollar General expanded. They just went all over the country. And I just saw a massive amount of triple net brokers starting to call multifamily owners. You know, they're grabbing databases from Title and going, when's the last time this exchange hand? Oh, it's been more than 20 years. Let me call those people and say, are you sick of tenants and toilets? And it was a really intelligent move for all parties, from the, you know, triple net brokers, multifamily owners who are fatigued, to invest in something that is mailbox money. And basically, like anything, you leave your W-2 job, you retire. You're done dealing with tenants and toilets, you retire, right? So it's kind of a cool diversified asset if you're growing more than just a couple pieces of real estate in your portfolio.
Yeah, it is, until you have your tenant like move out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the risk, right? One tenant out is 100% vacancy, and there's a lot of other factors, but we could talk about that. So it sounds like triple net is a favorite asset. You enjoyed that.
No, it's an interesting, coming from out of the multifamily and in out of parks, like you said, one of the biggest objections we hear when we're talking to owners is like, well, what would I do? Because I don't want to pay taxes. So why would I sell? But right. I'm sick of the management, and I don't want third party management anymore because they don't do a good job. They don't care for the park the way I do. And so to your point, it is a good strategy. And we have done that with some owners when they've gotten to a place where they want to retire or they want to be less hands-on, because really there's not, I mean, the problem with, if I can say there is one problem with owning commercial real estate, is like at some point you got to pay taxes. Like,
yeah, it's called tax deferral, not waiver.
Exactly. Like 1031, someone's going to pay the taxes, right? And yeah, they have a step up in basis so that once you pass your, and I don't know all these ins and outs of it, but there is theoretically a step up in basis so that your heirs don't have the tax bill that you would have otherwise. But the reality is you can't, I mean, to recognize that equity, there's a tax consequence. And so back to the asset class is triple net's been a good one. I think that what's interesting is like, you look at some of these tenants that qualify for these, and it's funny. I was just having lunch with a friend and a colleague in his firm. I won't say who, but they just pitched on a Top Golf triple net deal. And the numbers on that bad boy are crazy, if you can imagine. But I mean, that's wild to think about, but Top Golf signs triple net leases and they don't own the dirt that, well, and they might own it in some cases, but like in this case, they don't own the dirt, which is wild to me. Like, why would you not, as a company that big, own the real estate that you're operating? But
it's a good question. I would venture to say it's a balance sheet issue and a liability issue. So you're talking about a ground lease, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're just structured differently on the business, from their shareholders to their risk to their insurance to all the things. And I mean, dude, you're hitting golf balls off a second story with safety nets if you fall, but the net ain't going to catch everybody. That liability coming back to ground that you own would probably be a problem. So, you know,
I don't think anyone's dying at Top Golf, bro.
No. I know, but I'm just talking about the risk of that happening. I'm not saying no one's dying at Top Golf, but anyway, that's where my brain goes. So, but I'll jump in and say that my favorite, I don't even say favorite, we'll just say top. I think I pigeonholed you there and I apologize. The fun pieces of real estate to finance for me is multifamily with mobile home communities. And I'll tell you why. Like, and I love retail strip centers, man. I've done a ton of them. A lot of lenders don't like them. Triple net's great. But if I were to give you my lender Rolodex, and by the way, that's shrinking right now.
How many people would love that? We'll sell that for $59.99.
Yeah. My lender Rolodex isn't just, here's a name and number. It's everything. How they underwrite, what do they lend on? Yeah. Anyway, this isn't a pitch. If I sent that to anybody and said, call them when you have this asset type, this asset type, this asset, whatever. Highest number of lenders that will respond to you is if you have a multifamily request or you have a mobile home park request. Then you go, I have a hotel or an RV park, and you don't get as many lenders to call you back. And that is a good point to talking about cap rates later and when we get into some bigger details. But for me, it's a lot fun to really advocate for clients on getting the best loan. And it's a lot easier to do when more people want that type of asset class in their portfolio, because the lender is your partner. As many people think the lender's your servant, giving you the money to have you grow, you are in partnership with your lender because, I mean, they gave you money to be able to have rights to own. So for me, it's a lot of fun financing both of those. And I think a big reason why most conventional lenders will jump on both asset types, they're Fannie Mae compliant. So the government's going to backstop any investor that buys a note in a distressed market. Whereas an RV park, retail strip center, you're not going to get that. It is pure old school risk. Industrial is an absolute blast. You know, when you start seeing triple net industrial, you start seeing that easy you talked about. They're not that difficult. But I get to work with people who run amazing businesses in industrial places. So it's not just working with the investor, it's working with the small business owner who is expanding and they need bigger space to grow their business, whatever trinket, service, or product they might be making and selling into the things that we buy. And so being involved at that level is a lot of fun. So I would say industrial is up there on my list too.
So your favorite's multifamily. Is that because of just the attention it gets, meaning it's easier to finance?
Yeah. So financing multifamily is more fun. It's nice to get my clients 10 competing offers versus two, but I do like challenges. We do like the easy ones, but I do like challenges. And so retail strip centers have been my favorite. I used to love doing office buildings, but it is incredibly difficult right now to get any lender to look at those unless you're class A downtown in some of your top tier markets in the United States. But just love being able to bring clients more than one or two offers. So from an ownership perspective, multifamily is not my favorite. You and I have owned a hotel, RV park. We now own apartments and mobile home communities and some land we're developing. And I mean, you'd probably agree with me, but the mobile home park is far easier than the apartment building. Even though we have management in place, we still manage the manager and communicate with them and partner to bring the best, you know, stabilized, safe place, pride of rentership, I like to call it. Our tenants are happy. The park is just easier. And but the development, man, that's a whole nother thing. But on the ownership side, that's a blast. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, first of all, RV park slash motel, probably the worst combo you could have. And I say that with all respect, because I know there's a lot of RV slash motel parks out there. So if you have one, hey, more power to you. I think the model could work. You got to have a robust, excellent staff.
Well, and it's running a business. It's not just right, real estate. It's kind of the Top Golf theory. It's like, why would they not own the real estate? It's like that business is keeping them extremely busy and liable. I think RV parks operate a lot the same way. But back to your point about RV parks being the toughest to sell, or maybe not as fun. You know, the capital is not as easy to get for those as a mobile home community. And, but you and I own an RV park and we were excited because we jumped on the bandwagon of, hey, people are getting pushed out because we're affordable guys. We want to help people that can live somewhere and have pride and affordability without the government being involved, right? I would say that our experience there was, hey, we're going to come in, keep rents low. And we jumped on the bandwagon, which is a good bandwagon of long-term renting, in areas where parks historically were nightly, right? Running like a hotel. It was a nightmare because it was mixed use. I mean, you rent to somebody for one night versus 30 days. It's a completely different business model running out of the same park. And people that can do that can make a lot of money. They're working 7 days a week. I mean, they're living on site almost, if not most, to run an RV park business.
Yeah. And then you add a store on top of that, or I mean, in some cases, restaurants, or you've seen gas stations. And so it becomes a massive business, massive undertaking. But I think to your point on the multifamily side too, like when you talk about the buyer pool and the access to debt, they shrink considerably when you go from MH to RV. And so that's the biggest thing that I've noticed. It's just more challenging only because you're looking in a smaller pool and you're looking for somebody who's going to pay in right now cases last couple of years, really high prices for these assets, probably definitely higher than they've ever been. And that's a function of demand that's gone up significantly, but also primarily the debt has gotten better, but even then it's still a challenging market. So yeah, for sure. On the ownership side, I think too, on the multifamily, you have turnover. Right. Whereas you don't have that in mobile home parks. And that's one of the really unique benefits of owning a mobile home park. And I've told this to several people, is that you effectively have no turnover in a stabilized manufactured home community. When somebody passes or somebody moves out, the heirs either take over that home or they sell the home to a new resident. And so even though lenders factor in a vacancy 3 to 5%, in most cases, you're going to have to do 4 to 5%. There's really no vacancy. And I think that is one of the unique things that you don't see in any other asset class. When we're talking about housing, obviously you're going to see vacancy in retail, maybe strip centers, things like that. But generally, like, that's pretty unique.
Well, and for your listeners, I want to add a subcategory to a mobile home park investment, financing it or owning it or both, is you're talking about parks that are all tenant owned homes, right? Want to make sure we talk about that because there are parks out there in great locations where, say 100 spaces, 40 of them are park owned, and you have a quasi apartment responsibility, the same you would when you turn over a unit. So for your listeners, those are great assets too, but be ready to write some checks and be busier than if they're all tenant owned.
Yeah, good point. Actually, like in the Northwest, we don't see a lot of parks that have park owned homes, but you go to other parts of the country and that's pretty common. I mean, we're working a deal. Yeah, we're going to deal right now trying to put it in contract, and it's got 50 park owned homes. And so that's pretty rare. And that, yeah, to your point, that's much more like a multifamily deal, probably even worse because now you've got homes that are in a lot of cases, 70s, 80s, pre-HUD. Well, if it's past 78, it's post, it's HUD, but pre-HUD manufactured homes. And these things are probably not in great shape, or some of them can be in good shape, but generally you're going to have to put some money into those. And when you do that, you're talking furnaces, air conditioning units, potentially roofs, windows. So it can add up pretty quick. And then people beat those up. So,
well, not to pick on multifamily too much. The thing I like about our multifamily property is our curb appeal stays where we want it, right? So like any apartment building, the tenants have to abide by some pretty strict rules outside of their walls, right? The common area, the walkway, the yard, barbecue pit, the pool, whatever. Mobile home parks and RV parks, it's sometimes really difficult to get tenants to follow the rules they're supposed to because of the land that they're renting, that they have their home on. Everyone has a different definition of what clean is. I'll just put it that way. So in an apartment building, the door shuts, you don't see it. They live within it. And to your point, it gets expensive on turnover if somebody destroys your unit. Mm-hmm. But even with people that own their homes in a mobile home community or their RV in an RV park and it's long term, you remember in Westport, it was sometimes really hard to get people to follow the curb appeal rules that we had. And so that's what's nice about an apartment. You shut their door. Besides a patio getting stuffed with too much stuff or a dumpster overflowing, it's like you can keep the community for all tenants to not have to live with somebody else's mess or yard decor that is not approved. Yeah, so I remember that being a bit of a pain.
Yeah, that's true. And then like the other thing we'd see too is if RV park people just like accumulate stuff outside their RV, and then a multifamily, it's just all in their unit. So, but yeah, I think overall, I see that continuing. We've seen cap rates decrease as a function of both the stability of the asset class, but also demand. That's really what a cap rate indicates. And multifamily and parks are some of the lowest cap rates across the country, even now. And that's really because of those reasons. So yeah, it's no surprise. There's a lot of demand in that asset class. I think probably going to see that continue too.
They're the most fun to finance. Right now in 2023, anything that has a compressed cap rate, to your point, indication of health and desire and all the things, you have to put a whole lot more money down borrowing today's rates. If you don't get a seller carry or assume underlying loan below today's rates, you're putting a lot more down than say something like a motel or RV park that has a higher cap rate, right? So it's kind of interesting that on the finance side, some of the stuff I don't have as much fun historically financing is a little easier right now with today's interest rates versus the stuff that everybody wants. And so it kind of goes back and forth, but the whole premise of this episode is just talking about our fit, our tops and things we like. And I find it funny that stuff I enjoy financing is not necessarily stuff I enjoy owning, but diversification is fun. And that's what commercial real estate, it's all encompassing word, right? To our title of CRE deal flow, but CRE means so many things. And I can't imagine your listeners being upset. We say we don't like something. That's just not our business model. That's not where we want to spend our time. We want to spend our time doing this. I really liked our Westport property. It was a blast. It was a huge cap rate, but my God, it was busy. And it's just not for us.
It's very, very nice of you to say that, Tim.
It's true. We call it, I think you and I are in the car and people start seeing some swag later, but we kind of came up with it together. If you remember, you were so excited about the cap rate when we bought this place. And you said,
yeah, cap rate, bro.
We were going back and forth and you had said, God, this place, man, we're doing so much. And this place is just so busy. And I go, yeah, big problems. And then we just kind of came up with a saying, you know, big cap rate, big problems.
Big cap rate, big problems.
Dude, there's a rap song there.
There is, dude. I'm going to have to make that. But yeah, it is funny. And look, I mean, the one that asset class that I've always been intrigued by, and I never really have got into it, is self-storage. And yeah. I mean, there's so much of it. What's crazy is like people, this is the most, it's bizarre thing because people will pay for months and months and months just to store their stuff that they don't even go check on. And yeah. I've always been fascinated by that. One thing we've seen too more is demand for boat and RV storage too. And there's really not a ton of it, but man, how many RVs are on the road right now? And there's nowhere to put them. I guess, I don't know. Maybe that's, I don't know if that's a viable asset class, but I was just talking to some investors the other day and that's like, they're hot and heavy on it.
You can get SBA loans on more for your first time investor or first time, whatever, but you can get SBA loans up to 90% LTV on self-storage because it draws that line between passive investor and small business.
I think I knew that, but hearing you say that again now makes me want to go out and find a self-storage deal.
Do you remember the SBA loan we did? I don't think you want to do that again.
I do. And you're right. I definitely don't ever want to do that again. That was a nightmare.
Yeah, you brought up self-storage though. I completely forgot about that asset class. I don't finance as much of it. To your point, it is bizarre how many people hold on to their stuff. And I can't help but think it's just from dense living to a lot of people, their whole world possessions is what they're able to put in that storage unit. It may not be owning a home or even a car. So I could see why people really like to hold on to their stuff.
You think that ever goes away?
We're Americans. No, not until we change our attitude around consumption, which
never going to happen.
It may take Gen Z's kids to completely change that demand.
Western culture, baby. Stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. So,
yeah, right on. Well, I think that wraps up this show. I mean, we learned a lot about different asset classes. I think that I would summarize the show by saying, let's stick to multifamily. I think a lot of people do that. And again, it's one of the reasons it's so competitive. So if you're really wanting to get into that space, just know that that's a lot of other investors' goal. And it's a very competitive space. One thing I will say about it that's unique to it outside of MH is that they're continually building multifamily. And so from a product standpoint, there's going to continue to be more product online, coming online. Whereas in MH, you just don't see the parks being built at the rate that you see multifamily. Very difficult to build MH, and it's going to continue to be, I think, hopefully some of that changes in the future because we're big proponents of that. Yeah. But the economics plus the difficulties in getting zoning and land issues, hurdles overcome, just make it really hard. But just keep that in mind if you're thinking about getting into it, but fantastic asset class, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about mobile home parks. You know, a lot of stuff we touched on, we'll be talking more in detail on each one in this podcast. And that's the whole point. I mean, we're doing this one take. We're not really practicing too much. And so we're just getting into rhythm here, which is super cool.
I think people can tell we're not practicing.
I can't imagine they think any.
All right, man.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, good chat. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you on the next one.